Thank you very much. Net importer of crude. We import petroleum products. We currently are not importing crude because the Tema oil refinery has been down. But then we also gain revenue from export of crude oil as a result of the share that we have in Jubilee with the Talo partners. Now, increasingly, when the price went up to about 93, revenue from crude oil was becoming a very significant part of our budget. With the drop from above 90 to about 32 currently, or 33, we have lost billions of cedis into the national treasury. But at the same time, it has reduced the price of petroleum products on the market. And government took a decision in July last year to deregulate the price of petroleum products. And so with the fall in the price of light crude, there has been an accompanying reduction in crude oil price, in petroleum product prices since July last year. Now, what has happened is from the time that we fixed, we started a deregulation, and the last increase in transport fares, price of petroleum products have gone down by more than 37%. And so even with the introduction of the levies, the energy levy, at an average of about between 26 and 27%, we still are below the deregulation point by almost 11%. And so we've not gotten to where prices were even before. Now, let's take the energy levy. Utilities have accumulated debts over the last almost 15 to 20 years. And as a result of this accumulation of debt, it has choked the credit lines of the utility companies to an extent that VRA today cannot go to any bank and establish an LC, because I think they owe virtually every bank in Ghana. As the line got choked here, they went and opened a new account in another bank, and then they'll take the credit until it gets choked, then they open a new account with another bank. So now no bank, any bank they go to say hey, anymore, you know. Now, if we want a sustainable power sector, we have to deal with that debt. You must deal with that debt. And how are we going to deal with that debt? I don't have that money. If I had, I would pay on behalf of VRA. And so we need to take that money from somewhere. And so the point is, at the time when God has blessed us to have the price go down 37%, it was even 11% lower, we take a little money and say, look, let's all contribute and pay off this debt, because we all use that power that VRA generated. I don't see what really we have done wrong. Aside from that, a portion of the debt, a portion of the levy is going to go to the road fund to pay arrears to contractors and also invest in the road sector. Happily today, more than 90%, as a result of my indigenization policy, I have harangued the road ministry, more than 90% of contractors working in our road sector are Ghanaian, our own people. And so if that money goes to them, they are going to invest it in building roads. And when they're building the roads, what will happen? It will lead to employment. Masons, steel benders, cement sellers, carpenters, truck operators, excavator operators, bulldozer operators will find jobs. And so it's a reinvestment in our own economy. That money is not going outside. It is being reinvested in our own economy. It's going to our road contractors. And our road contractors are going to invest it here. And if they make a profit, they're going to invest that profit here in Ghana. And so it's just like recycling our own money. And so I think that that is an investment rather than to say you're overtaxing the people or something like that. Because the thing about government's investment and expenditure is the money doesn't come from anywhere. It comes from ourselves. And especially you have a country where the number of people who know that they must pay a tax on income do not exceed 30% of the population. 70% of the population pay only indirect taxes. And so you either have to go and knock the shop and take a daily rate. And at the end of the year, we're all supposed to go and file our taxes and declare our incomes. And you say, okay, you pay 1,000 Ghana, you pay 500, you pay this. 70% or more of our people don't file their tax returns. And so the only way you can raise money, really, is through the tax system. And the only way you can get everybody to contribute is through indirect taxes. And indirect taxes include like consumption of petroleum products. And so those who consume more, if you have a V8 and you buy more petrol, then you're paying more tax. If you sit in a trotro, you're paying less tax because 15 of you are in the trotro using the same fuel. And so those are some of the things that we're faced with. It's not every decision that would be popular. But what was I elected for as president? To take popular decisions? If I took popular decisions to make you happy with me, this country would be in the ground by now. They're tough decisions. I mean, do I take pleasure in imposing taxes on people as if, you know, you just take a pleasure in doing it? You don't. But you look at the alternative, and the alternative is worse. And so you must take decisions that are in the national interest. The benefits might not be seen immediately, but then in future, people will see what benefits they have accrued from the decisions that were made. And so despite the 27% increase in the price, we're still 11% lower than we were when we started deregulation. And in any case, for the vulnerable in society, transport fares have not gone up. So actually the increase is hitting us, the users of private vehicles. And for most of us, I mean, if you're able to drive your own private vehicle alone to work and back, you know, then you show that you have, you know, an income that, you know, you can contribute a little more than the person who sits in a trotro. And so that's the issue with. The other side is the tax laws that were passed. There were two laws that taxes that were proposed, but it was noticed and a letter had already gone to the speaker stopping them. One was the 1% tax on profits from treasury bills, income from treasury bills. A letter had gone to the speaker, you know, asking for an amendment of that particular tax. The other one was the increase in tax on services, withholding tax on services to 15%. A letter had already gone reducing that to 7.5%. So I think that issue you talked about, you know, has been dealt with in respect of those particular taxes that people complained about. It had been noticed and a letter had been sent even before the outcry began with regards to that. Guns in the system. Yes, we all must be worried about guns in the system. And so from the time I became president, we have not been issuing licenses for importation of guns and bullets. And so if you notice, there's probably a shortage of bullets, and that's why there was that attempt to bring in a huge consignment of bullets that was arrested at Aflao recently. Because the thing is, when you have more small arms and weapons in the system, then it falls into wrong hands and people are able to use it to do things that you are untoward and you normally create a more violent society. And so we're doing everything possible to ensure that people don't have access to these weapons and to, as much as possible, reduce the amount of weapons in the system. And the police are doing well. Like I told you, they did that bust, major bust at the Kumasi place, and then also the customs and immigration to made the bust of the plenty, many weapons, that bullets that were found. And so a lot of work is going on to try and resolve that. With regards to corruption, corruption does not wear political face. Corruption is about systems and strength of institutions. Government is a continuum, and all of us must contribute our quota to the fight against corruption. We have institutional weaknesses, and traditionally what has happened in the past is that accountability is exacted when one government has gone out of power and a new government comes into power. Then it starts investigating the government that has gone out of power. But while the government is in power and issues are happening with corruption, traditionally they have not been investigated. This is the first government. And I made a pledge that any issues of corruption brought to my attention, I will have them investigated and dealt with. But you cannot be an adherent of constitutional democracy and be an admirer of arbitrary justice. There is due process. I was speaking to one of my colleague heads of state, and he said something very instructive. He said, when I was a military ruler, I just arrested the people, and they were guilty until they proved themselves innocent. He said, but today, as a civilian ruler, one, I can't arrest them, but even when I arrest them, they are innocent until I prove them guilty. That is democracy. We can't eat our cake and have it. As I'm speaking today, the Attorney General has been served. Somebody has filed a writ at the Supreme Court to say that the judgment, she had no jurisdiction, the court had no jurisdiction for that judgment they gave in the way you make case. If we did not have the Constitution and I was head of the military government, I'd have gone and grabbed the guy and locked him up until he's proved innocent. But you must go by due process. You must follow the law. Just this morning, they were going to issue the fife on Woyomi, and then this writ was served on the Attorney General. So what should we do? The last I checked, the Attorney General has retrieved in excess of 50 million Ghana cedis from those I instructed money to be retrieved from. The JIDA case particularly, in the service contracts that they signed, they said they were taking loans to do the training. But JIDA as an institution is not mandated to give loans, so those loans were illegal. And that's why I said the loans should be retrieved, because if they were loans, then you must pay back. And she's collected in excess of 50 million. So far, from corruption cases that have occurred, we've retrieved more than 70 million Ghana cedis of the people's money. And so while you're doing that, some are paying, some are going to court and saying that you have no right to take the money from them. And you cannot, you know, use revolutionary justice on them. You have to go through the route, the legal route. And this is an Attorney General who is doing so well to protect the public purse. And so this government has the will to investigate corruption, and is actually investigating and punishing corruption. We sacked 163 National Service Coordinators, fired them because of corruption. 35 of them are before court as I speak. We recovered almost 20 million Ghana cedis from them for money that they had misappropriated. But the unfortunate thing in this country is, when you show the will to investigate corruption, then your opponent takes it as evidence and say, ah, you see, This proves that this government is corrupt, but it's not like it didn't exist. It has existed. From the investigation we did about the National Service, it started before I came into office. And so it's a risk a president must take in the fight against corruption. And the thing is, corruption is measured mostly by perception. And sometimes perception is bigger than reality. So when you have a country that has a free and vibrant media, that has good self-expression, the perception of corruption is normally higher because we are free to speak about it. If you're in a country where you don't have media, you can't talk freely, they normally would have a lower perception of corruption because they cannot speak freely about it. And Ghana has the highest media per capita in Africa, if not in the world. If they shared radio stations amongst us, we all have a higher per capita. We have almost 300 FM stations, you know, in a country of our land size. If you compare that with any other country, we have the highest media per capita. And it's a good thing, because the media must continue to be the mouthpiece in which we fight against social ills. And corruption is one of those social ills. But the point also is that you don't only wait for corruption to happen to sanction it. You must put in place the instruments that prevent people from being corrupt. And that's one of the things this government has been doing. We're implementing the GIFMIX program, Public Financial Management Program, so that it takes away human discretion in terms of manual invoices and all that. And so if you have your budget and you have to draw money, you must have the code, you must have the details, you must fill it into the GIFMIX and apply for release of the money to pay for this and this and that. So we can always check and see who inputted that particular information. And so we're doing that. We're using technology to try and remove a lot of things. I spoke to the governor of the Bank of Ghana and I said, we must work for a cashless society. We carry too much cash in this country. If you go to Kenya, they use mobile phones to pay for goods. You go to the local supermarket, you ship up your mobile phone and you pay for your goods. We carry a wad of money in our pocket to go to the supermarket. If I'm driving my car and a policeman stops me, you pass through red lights, and I have a debit card, can I pay him a bribe? If you ask for a bribe, bring your point of sale device. So we must work to reduce the amount of cash we carry in this country. And we must put the systems in place that make it difficult for people to demand bribes from us or accept bribes from us. And it's not a political issue. When we use it for politics, then we actually take away our attention from the work that needs to be done to be able to check corruption. And so that's why I say I won't play the blame game. I'm president, you know, of this country, elected. It's my duty to continue the fight against corruption. And we'll do it. We'll continue to do it. There are other investigations that we're doing. And I haven't stopped any investigation. The agencies come to me and say, we're initiating an investigation into this. And I say, okay, go ahead. And they do. A whistleblower raised issues of corruption in NHIS at a time several months ago, about 6 to 8 months ago, because the hospital facilities had said they won't provide service to NHIS cardholders because the scheme owes them. And a whistleblower came and said, oh, these facilities, they are just ripping you off. A lot of the claims they forward are false. And he gave evidence. And so BNI initiated an investigation and told me they've initiated an investigation into NHIS. And that investigation is ongoing. I haven't attempted to interfere in the investigation or anything. There's another investigation they are also working on. There are several. It's not like these things haven't existed, you know. They exist, and we see it, and all of us keep quiet. But it's a duty of the president, if it comes to my attention, to have the right investigative organization to go into it and find out if there's wrongdoing. And if there's wrongdoing, to go ahead and punish that wrongdoing. And that's what I'm doing. With regards to competency, it depends on what your criteria for competence, you know, is. And I don't like to rate myself. I think that the people of Ghana will be the ones to rate me by the performance. By the performance of my leadership. And I think that competence encompasses a lot of things. It encompasses the ability to lead with a warm heart, to be tolerant of dissent. It's all competence. To be able to bring people together. But like I said, I'll leave it there. The right judges of a person's competence are the good people of Ghana. And on 7th November, they will judge my competence. That's all I'm saying. I think that in the next question, I will just say that we operate with the Constitution of Ghana. And the Constitution of Ghana prescribes the terms and conditions under which one can be president and what one can do in respect of the term of office of president. And the Constitution of Ghana speaks about president. It doesn't talk about party. And it says that the president shall be eligible to 2 terms in office, to re-election, if he is re-elected. And so, as for the Ghanaian people, I'm offering myself. My party has endorsed me. And I'm going to the Ghanaian people and saying, give me a second term. I've not done 8 years, I've done 3 years. That's why I'm doing this press conference. And this is my first term in office. And so the Constitution says I can go back to the Ghanaian people and stand for re-election. And that's what I'm going to do. And so let's leave it to the judgment of the Ghanaian people. I think that in answering the issue of corruption, I have virtually dealt with this issue of refund of monies. And so I'll leave it there. I know the Attorney General and Minister of Justice is working very seriously on this matter. And she will continue to work, you know, to ensure that she retrieves any monies that anybody has taken. But let me draw your attention to something. Since I instituted the Judgment Debt Commission, and I gave specific instructions to the Attorney General, and I said, fight every judgment debt case, you'll be surprised. And I'm going to give you a number of cases listed here. And if you have the accounting to the people, you can refer to it. It's on page 154. Since that time, the case of Sweater and Socks versus the Attorney General, the state had avoided the payment of $28.9 million as a result of the Attorney General fighting the case and refusing to pay. In the case of Ang Mote versus the Attorney General, the High Court, the state has set aside a judgment that was given asking the state to pay 99 million Ghana cedis. And so the Attorney General saved us 99 million Ghana cedis. She saved us $28.9 million. Then in the case of China Jinling International Economic and Technical Corporation, the state was saved $352 million and $1.6 million in that case. Because finally the payment the state was made was limited to 100,000 Ghana cedis. That is what the court said we should pay the company. And the company was demanding 352 million Ghana cedis. In the case of Palmot Holdings versus the Ministry of Sports, the company was asking for $27 million. The Attorney General defended it successfully, and we avoided the payment of that amount. In the case of AMI Africa Exploration versus the Attorney General, a claim for damages in excess of $1 million was avoided as a result of the defense. In case of Dunkwa Gold Fields versus Government of Ghana, the state avoided the payment of $200 million that was being demanded. In the case of Rona Construction versus Area Wood Products Limited and Attorney General, the Attorney General got set aside a judgment debt of 3.5 million Ghana cedis. In the case of Rebecca Van Dyke versus the IGP and Attorney General, the Attorney General saved us 946,000 Ghana cedis. And then several others. In the case of Balkan Energy, Balkan demanded $200 million. Eventually, we ended up paying $12 million. And so, there are so many. There's still some Tiglam, Tigen, LLC, so and so forth. All judgment debt cases, which, because of my instruction to the Attorney General, she has very successfully defended and saved Ghana, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in debts that we would have paid as a result of, you know, judgment debts. And so it is a part of the fight against corruption, and I think that we are up to it and will continue to play our part.